Hi, my name is Gunnar Froh and I'm your host on the Wunder Mobility podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Wunder Mobility podcast. Today I'm speaking with Christoph Wolf. Christoph is Global Head of Mobility at the World Economic Forum. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Christoph, World Economic Forum is something that everybody obviously has heard about. It's on the news at least once a year. You can't miss it. But I think not everybody really knows how this works and what this is about. Can you, before we dive into mobility and a bunch of topics over there, give us a quick take on what the World Economic Forum actually is?
Yeah, I'm very happy to do so. Indeed, most people associate the World Economic Forum with Davos. Actually, I'm being asked often if the World Economic Forum, if I'm working out of Davos, actually. And then I'm telling, yes, we are in Davos, at least until now, once a year for a week, together with many heads of states and CEOs from many companies around the globe. But actually, this is only the tip of the iceberg. Yeah? So the forum has a status of an international organization, such as the Red Cross or the World Bank, etc. And it's the International Organization for Public-Private Collaboration. So the forum engages with its almost 1,000 partners and many public organizations on topics, on themes, which one industry or one organization alone cannot solve. Yeah, where you need stakeholders from that area, public and private, civil society, research, academia, to work together across the value chain to get something going. And the forum is structured around industries. So I am leading one out of 8 global industries, mobility, that is includes automotive and mobility as a service, supply chain, aviation, travel, tourism, aerospace. And it's my job to work to identify with these partners, all around 150 globally, relevant or topics, important and urgent topics. And then we jointly start initiatives that are designed to have impact on a global level. And I'm sure we get into examples later on.
Mm-hmm. And I think that many people also ask themselves how all of that gets funded, because much of what you're describing sounds in some ways like something also a consulting firm would do, and bringing people together, hosting events, maybe publishing papers. But then it's clear what the business model is behind that, basically selling consulting teams. And that's not the case here. How does WEF work financially? How is all of that possible, the work that you're doing?
Well, the forum, different to consulting firms, so the forum is a platform. Yeah, the forum is a platform on which people work together, communicate together, solve topics and address important issues. So the forum does work with consulting firms. So consulting firms are members, are partners of the forum, and actually we can engage consulting firms to help us in these multi-stakeholder collaborations to address issues. But the forum itself is not a consulting firm. And the business model is straightforward. Yeah. So it's actually these almost 1,000 partners, they pay membership fees. Yeah. So they basically want to be part of the World Economic Forum. I mean, the big headline is committed to improving the state of the world since 50 years. So Davos had its 50th anniversary just early this year before COVID hit. So the partners basically entrust the World Economic Forum to do the right thing, yeah, to bring them together on behalf of important topics.
When I look back at, I was reading about the work that you did also before WEF, and you have a long history in travel and mobility and logistics and so on, including 17 years at McKinsey leading the global logistics and travel practice also over there. When we work in mobility now, it seems to us like a very special time. It seems like there's so much happening at once, but I wonder if that has always been the case, basically. How do you look at the space that we're working in and that our listeners are working in as it evolved over time? Is it really true that there's something more accelerating and something going on now, or has this always been the case over 20 plus years, probably?
No, I think it's a special time. Yeah. So I mean, you can say all times are special, but it's a special time because it's a confluence between different developments that actually are coming together at this time. And I should say that, I mean, the forum is a purpose-driven, it's a mission-driven organization. So we are committed to values like sustainability. Sustainability is very important in the forum, as well as social cohesion. Yeah? So basically bringing the world together, dealing with inequality, and so the big themes of its time. Now, in mobility, what's different is that, you know, mobility has to react to the climate crisis. Yeah. So, I mean, there's no time to lose. Yeah. So we know that the carbon budget of the world is getting closer to tipping points in many places. In the Arctic, you see the weather patterns changing, et cetera. It has impact on citizens in many countries. And mobility or transport contributes like 25% to that. And it hasn't actually, while the emissions from the power sector have gone down over the last, let's say, 10 years, in mobility and transport, they are rather increasing. So they are different sectors. So it's different in road, light duty vehicles on like road transport, different on cargo and on aviation, on shipping. And this is a big area of our work at the forum and of my work specifically, also building on what I did before, to really get that transition towards net zero transport going, you know, in many sectors. And I think there's examples on which we could dive deeper. But at the same time, mobility connects people and it brings people to their work. It brings people to their loved ones. It actually connects the world through aviation, through trade. I mean, basically 90% of all goods that we consume are being shipped by ocean carriers, etc. I mean, the wealth, the well-being, the GDP of many countries, developing countries around the world depends on mobility and transport. And we have to maintain that because otherwise the world becomes less and less connected. And wealth gets less and less unequally distributed. And so that's why we have to actually work with the mobility options. And the new mobility options have to do a lot with digitization. Yeah, so, I mean, people can move differently. We can trade parcels and containers. So we can do a lot better. Yeah, so we can act on demand instead of scheduled routes. So we can do many things better, but we have to learn together how to do it best.
I know that you've also initiated a number of initiatives at the World Economic Forum around different aspects of mobility. So it's hard to cover all of them, but what's one that you would maybe pick out as one that has particularly high impact? So where maybe either you have already or you're about to change how mobility probably evolves because of this initiative. What is an example of an area that you're tackling and how are you able to have an impact there?
Yes, I think I would let me take two. And I think there's one actually where we come together also with Wunder Mobility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm happy to talk a bit about that. So a lot of the transitions happen in cities. So there's a big promise of the new mobility to basically reduce, to make mobility more safe. Yeah, so less fatalities, cleaner, less or no emissions, and more inclusive. So actually people get to work in an affordable way. So, and to make it all efficient by using basically the digital means. So this is now in COVID times, the mobility patterns in cities were challenged. Yeah. So public transit, suddenly, you know, nobody was going to use public transit. Yeah. So because the people felt the infection risk. At the same time, people that were essential to keep basically our life going, people working in supermarkets, people working in hospitals, they needed to get to work. Yeah. And I think we, together with Wunder and a number of other partners, so we started that initiative, yeah, basically We All Move. And I think it has got a lot of attention and gone pretty viral. And I think we were able to bring services, actually, mobility as a service companies across the world to that platform that committed to themselves to keep our life going, you know, to basically bring essential workers, essential to the places where they needed to be. So I think that was very fast and agile. I think it was needed. I think it's a great example. And I think we couldn't have done that. I mean, if we hadn't had the connection to all these parties through our so-called Global New Mobility Coalition, you know, which basically is a multi-stakeholder, so a policy lab for cities. So what we think actually, I mean, cities have the key in their hand to move towards electric vehicles. And they can do many things actually to basically, and it's not only electric vehicles, it's shared mobility. It's at some stage, it may be autonomous mobility. And at the end, it's about bringing more, you know, reclaim public space. So people, you know, the public space in cities shouldn't just be there for driving or for parking or for congestion. And the Global New Mobility Coalition is a group of more than 200 organizations around the world with the most prominent, the OEMs, the suppliers, the ride-hailing and shared companies like Lyft and Uber and Ola and others, but also like civil society organizations to really think through and work together with cities like London, Amsterdam, Los Angeles, Singapore, Beijing, in order to transition towards shared electric and autonomous mobility. And so this is actually, so these two things were much in common, were much building on each other. Maybe the other one I could highlight is our current initiative on clean skies of tomorrow. So let's change mode for a moment. So we go to aviation. Aviation is, it does connect the world. Yeah. But it's the social license to operate has been threatened over the last couple of years. I mean, you all read about flight shaming and had the conversation within our families that we may not want to go far because actually aviation is bad for climate. And we are very convinced that we will need to fly as a global community. We may need to fly more, maybe not less business after COVID, but basically there's like 30, 40% of the world that hasn't flown yet. Yeah. And they want to have the same privilege. But we need to do it sustainably and zero carbon. And that means we need to move the industry towards sustainable aviation fuel. And we have started an initiative called Clean Skies. And we're working with governments, with the airlines, airports, fuel companies, et cetera, around the globe to really basically bring these sustainable aviation fuels and at some stage also hydrogen or, you know, battery electric flights into the mix, yeah, so that by 2050, we will actually fly without actually emitting carbon.
That's very interesting to try and understand how this works in both of these examples. On the one hand, formulating a position amongst so many participants, like in the Global New Mobility Coalition, and then on the other hand, how to have influence on cities, for example. I think that you mentioned there are certain, maybe values incorporated into the World Economic Forum and becoming a member, this kind of multi-stakeholder approach on sustainability. And at the same time, the companies who make up and organizations who make up the forum are very diverse and profit-driven companies. So how do you manage to align these many players around certain common positions? Do you sort of set a direction and then whoever can buy into this will join for this specific cause? Or how does this go about in the first step to even formulate before even influencing somebody?
Well, first of all, I think the forum is this international organization for public-private collaboration, and we measure ourselves on impact. Yeah, so we really want to get things done. Yeah, so it's not just about a talk, but it's about action. And action obviously is around policy. If you want to change something large scale, it's often about finance. Yeah, basically bringing together industry players with financial institutions. And, you know, the Green Deal of the European Commission is an example, but there's many other schemes to really bring finance to places where transition is needed and where, you know, smart financial engineering actually can make a difference. So we have those partners actually in our platform. And so we are value driven and the partners share this. And I think, you know, the good thing is we have now come to a point where there's very few parties on the world that say, you know, Paris is not a good idea. Yeah? And it's getting hopefully less and less so, some outliers maybe. So in a general direction, which means mm-hmm. to guide the transition towards clean, safe, and inclusive mobility, mm-hmm. I think we should be, are aligned. But then it's about picking the right themes for impact. Yeah. So basically saying, where is a window of opportunity? Who can work together? What is the landing point? Is it the right time window? And I could say, for example, for the aviation example, there is obviously a regulatory process. So ICAO is a global regulator on this. It's a UN body. We are closely connected. Yeah. So the Secretary General of ICAO is the chairwoman of my board. So they have a process ongoing, but it's obviously 195 companies need to agree. So it's not a quick process. Yeah. So they take time. And it's very much about building confidence. Yeah. It's building confidence that this is doable. And so this is about building confidence and building instruments and building economical opportunities to make this attractive. And that is actually, then you find traction. Then you get traction from the airlines, from the airports and everybody who obviously needs to make money. So I think at the end of the day, I mean, we're not in an altruistic commercial space. I mean, these are all companies that are responsible to their shareholders. Yeah. So they need to make money to make it profitable. But they also realize there may not be a business any longer in the future, aviation, for example, if they ignore the reality of the climate crisis.
Mm-hmm. And my impression is that you basically have some tools that you also mentioned now at your disposal. One would be probably to bring some data to the surface, maybe publishing yourself or highlighting what others have published, but then also like providing a stage, right? Like you mentioned about if somebody is willing to come out first or is one of the first, you have probably a larger audience than they have by themselves to position themselves. And then finally, to connect people so that they find others faster to help them.
Indeed. I think, you know, Professor Schwab had a lot of foresight like 50 mm-hmm. years ago when he basically claimed that, in a way, space for multi-stakeholder collaboration. I mean, mm-hmm. in Germany, we say Rundertisch, yeah? So it's not rocket science, yeah? So it's probably not the first person who had the idea, but basically he dwelled on that, yeah? And you talked about tools, yeah? So obviously the events, in a way, are a tool because they provide the stage, yeah? In order to announce something, to say something, you know, you get media attention there, yeah? You get the opportunity to connect with high-level public figures, yeah. So it's an opportunity. It's a tool in a way, yeah. So I mean, our media, activity. So we have almost 100 million followers. So there's quite a machinery, or there's quite a great approach in order to get attention for the right topics, yeah. And it's about access, yeah, having basically access to both governments and private sectors for the right things, yeah, for the things that gel in the community, that where people generally care about. And we can give the voice to people that otherwise would not be heard, yeah, so that people from developing countries. I was in Paris like 5 years ago, and I think what really made a difference at the time to get to 1.5 degrees was basically the people from the Marshall Islands or from other small islands in the Pacific, basically speaking up and saying, well, you know, for you guys, it may be long, it may sound like far off, yeah, but for us, it's actually a reality today, yeah. So our living space becomes smaller and smaller. So we need to move people from one, evacuate people from one island to the next. I think that was very touching for the people there. And I think this is actually what made a huge impact. And so I think the forum has the opportunity to give voice to a lot of people that otherwise would not be heard.
Mm-hmm. And I think from my experience or our experience at Wunder Mobility, when we did this initiative together earlier in the year around We All Move and basically the COVID response from the Global New Mobility Coalition, I was surprised how, I would say, accessible the teams are at the World Economic Forum and fast moving and how you can actually put something together. Because I think you think there are 200 members or so and you will like stand in a long queue and maybe never get through. But the reality is that not maybe everybody is also equally active or maybe has an idea in this moment. So I think the barriers to entry are maybe surprisingly low. But then the reach is quite big.
Yeah, and indeed, I think this is actually our mission. Yeah. So also at a very personal basis. So in mobility, we are a team of around 30 globally. So the forum has offices, the head offices in Geneva. I'm actually would normally be based in New York, but because of COVID, I'm in Germany all the time currently. But we have an office in San Francisco, in Beijing, in Mumbai, in Tokyo. And we're working as a team. Yeah. And so we are very committed to these topics. And this is actually important for us. And especially, you know, if you are a company, a purpose-driven company, a global innovator, et cetera, that actually has a great business model and reach. So it's a good place to work together. Yeah. So to make something big happen.
You are leading mobility for the World Economic Forum. So it's not just Europe. It's also not just North America. Mm-hmm. Your work extends into China and all places around the world. Where do you see, we have a primarily European audience, a little bit North American audience. Where do you see, you know, regions of innovation around the world for mobility that you probably advise after Corona, all of us should travel to?
Well, I think it has been written and talked about a lot that obviously California on one way is a lab for the world. Yeah. So especially when you talk about digitization and business models based on smart, IoT, on data and all of that. So I don't think it's a coincidence that all these platform companies, the Ubers, Lyft, Airbnb, etc., are US based. Yeah. So this work, capital gets invested and, where talent is. And so I think, we have to be in California. It's really important. And we see a lot of traction coming out of there. But equally and almost equally now, China has become also a very important breathing space for really innovative companies. In all these areas, I think, Didi moves more people than Uber, obviously has to do with the fact that China has so many people. But there are other companies as well. There's Baidu on autonomous, et cetera. So I think there's a lot of, digital competence. There's actually a digital native population there that actually, that basically shops on the internet. And so e-commerce is booming, and I think one can talk a lot about the socioeconomic realities in China, but that you have a young population that is very much digitally capable, and that is actually that has an engineering mentality in a way, and that is moving fast. Yeah, and this we'll see that. We also see innovation coming out of like India. Yeah. So same thing, young population, you see Ola cabs, you see other actually places you, and they're also, they have clean air issues. So it's actually there where people want to change things because it's good for the economy. It's exportable. I think it's also politically supported, but it's truly interesting to see what in places like Shanghai and Beijing, Shenzhen, etc., what's really happening there. But it goes to Singapore, it goes to Jakarta. To the mega cities that people are aware that the mega cities are growing and they need to become livable again for all the millions of people that are there.
And Germany and to some extent, other countries in the West, Japan, certainly have benefited in the past from the strong role of the automotive industry. And more that's coming under pressure at the moment. There was extreme decline in new car sales in the beginning of the year. And then there are sort of rounds of cost savings announced at the big manufacturer. But at the same time, also huge investment programs into electrification and digital services. Can you, from your work at the World Economic Forum, look more than 1 or 2 years into the future of how you think these companies are going to change, these big incumbent OEMs?
Well, I think that the change is underway, and it may have started a little late in some companies. And obviously, these companies are huge, and it takes enormous leadership effort, to take them into the next era that is different. And obviously, the internal combustion engine was a specific, was a key technology, that brought a lot of wealth that has been optimized to in a significant way. And the automotive industry in Germany is super important and responsible for every seventh job in Germany. Yeah. So you need to make every effort. But I would be optimistic. Yeah. So, I mean, logistics is a German, basically DHL, Kühne and Nagel, DB Schenker. So all the big logistics plays actually are, Germany based. And in automotive, BMW, Daimler, Volkswagen, et cetera, I think they have all acknowledged. Yeah. And they're moving slowly, but the challenges are there. Yeah. So the car architecture is going to change. It's a lot more software than hardware driven. I think before automotive companies were selling cars, and then when they left the factory ground, I think they were basically done with it. Yeah. Now it's about life cycle. You need to be connected to your consumers. I mean, it's about data. It's about services. I mean, there will be probably a lot more money made with services than with the purchase in the first place or with the sales in the first place. These are all big changes, but I see a lot of movement, so we should be optimistic. But it's the next 10 to 15 years, and you asked at the beginning, has it always been like that? I think these times are special. This time is different, as some people say. And the combination of digitization, of the need to move to become sustainable and Paris compatible, I think this is quite something. Yeah, and we are in the middle of it.
It seems like in automotive, there are these kind of radical new entrants, of course, Tesla leading all the way, but then NIO from China moving up in market capitalization, maybe number five at the moment.
Yep.
And then there are all the more traditional companies that everybody has known about forever. Would you somehow classify those traditional companies? Can you also see them fall into different groups already, deploying like very maybe quite different strategies, or do you think that they are all sort of trying to find their way down the middle of the road, hatching their bets in all sorts of directions? Can you make out really differences between them?
Well, I think if we talk about the German companies, I think, we have the big OEMs and they're global. I think that they're super attractive brands. I mean, we can see that even in this year, China came back to almost normal after a few months and actually seems to be buying cars again in a significant way. And I think we benefit from that. And so these companies will all, in a way, be present, but they may... there may be new ways of collaborations on technologies. Yeah. So also on mobility as a service platforms, you see, Daimler and BMW working together more closely. And so, but I think it will be interesting to see, for the mastery of the new age, which basically is a software age. Yeah. So, Tesla indeed is, others are referring to that also big time, has set some standard, not just brand wise, but also technology wise. I think the battery management system seems to be very advanced. I mean, the software architecture as well. And while, it also took them some effort in order to get there. I mean, if you remember that, until the Model 3 factory was up, it really took time and a lot of optimization. But now they're prevailing and there's a lot of hype there, obviously, on the valuation side. So that's the OEM side. But on the tier one suppliers, I mean, there's obviously a big question on how to bring the component portfolio into the digital and electric world. I think, basically all the big ones are working on that. And I see actually a lot of determination now to basically embrace that and to make that transition over the next 10 years happen with investments into new technology, new products. And I think the German engineering has always been quite challenge led. Yeah. So I think this is now being embraced. Yes, there's risks, that maybe not everybody will be able to make the full transition, but I think there's a lot of opportunity and I can see people, new forms of collaborations happening. So I would be optimistic.
We talked initially about cities and regions and then some players within the space, the automotive industry in particular. maybe we can shift towards the end to some personal mobility choices. Is there something that a service or a vehicle type or so that you have come across in the last years that you like and that you've sort of integrated into your day-to-day?
Well, I mean, funny that you asked that. I mean, in New York, basically, we don't have a car, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to own a car in New York. And we happen to live in a place where the subway is in the basement, okay. Almost. Yeah. So that's for sure. So it's all public transit. Yeah. Now in Germany, so we live in a more rural area. But we have gone electric in 2014. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were the first three mm-hmm. customers. And so we have become electric since then. That is also, as a family, I have two sons and both are very technology interested. And so this is actually, these always have been like family projects. Yeah. So how to get more performance and what is the next place to get to technology wise and what's the features and et cetera. So we are very conscious, technology conscious family here.
That's very early. And I think that the i3 is still sold, not so much changed. It was extremely early at the time. And now it's still a very, very modern car. More recently, basically, much of the talk is about light electric vehicles and kick scooters, first generation. It's maybe just one example, but also more kind of an in-between of those early kick scooters and maybe cars. Do you think that's really going to happen? And when and how far is that away? Are we going to change away from either riding a car or a bike kick scooter? And is there something in between? Or do you even see that somewhere around the world already?
Well, I think that, the choices have grown. So I think we have also been thinking about buying an e-bike or an e-scooter, et cetera, or renting. So when we go to, to Berlin or so, I think we do explore the city by, various choices there. I think, our son lives in Zurich and I think he has an e-bike subscription. So, so I think mobility as a service is actually growing in many ways. And I would also see that over the next 20 years. I mean, the fact that we always basically drive in the same car that is actually designed to serve you in inner city traffic, as well as on the maybe two times a year longer term trip where you need a lot of baggage. So that means you have an oversized car that is empty most times in dense inner city traffic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think we will become a lot smarter in having the right asset or using the right asset for the right reason. And we see that in our own usage pattern. So I think we are getting there, and especially the young generation, millennials, are getting there first. Yeah. And so I think this change that we started is actually going to accelerate in my mind.
All right. Christoph, it's been fascinating to talk to you, hear more about how this forum that everybody knows about and everybody sees on the news at least once a year actually works a little bit on the hindsight, what some of the ideas and driving values behind it are and how you're translating those into initiatives. Thanks a lot for taking some time for us today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Yeah, so great talking.
Thank you. Bye-bye.